Hi, I'm Rob Nadelson. The title of this article is The Supreme Court's Confused Decision in Holland versus Brockeen. On June 15, 2023, the Supreme Court issued Holland versus Brockeen. Among other issues, the court addressed the scope of the Constitution's Commerce Clause. Specifically, the court upheld the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, as within Congress's power to, quote, regulate commerce with the Indian tribes, end quote. The quotation, of course, being from the Constitution. The Commerce Clause part of the decision is a mess. There's no more polite way to describe it. With two exceptions in favor of the states, the Articles of Confederation, which were in effect from 1781 until 1789, gave Congress broad power over all Indian affairs. When writing the Constitution, some framers wanted to give the new federal Congress complete authority over Indian affairs as well, but without the exceptions. But the Constitutional Convention rejected that idea. Instead, the final Constitution conferred discrete powers on different branches of the new federal government, with the states retaining whatever was left over. Specifically, first, the Constitution gave Congress authority over commerce with the tribes. The Constitution also gave Congress general authority over any inhabitants, including Indians, who lived in federal territories. The Constitution empowered Congress to define domestic application of the, quote, law of nations, meaning international law, including relationships with tribal non-citizens. The Constitution granted the president authority over military operations, including Indian wars, and it bestowed upon the president and Senate the power to make treaties with Indian nations. Over time, most of these powers have become less important. After all, relatively few Native Americans now live within federal territories. Almost all Native Americans are American citizens. There are no more Indian wars, and the government no longer makes treaties with the tribes, although existing treaties remain in effect. The most significant remaining federal power is Congress's commission to, quote, regulate commerce with the Indian tribes. When Congress passed the Indian Child Welfare Act, it claimed to be doing this. Now, there's a lot of confused writing on the meaning of regulate commerce with the Indian tribes. However, the meaning of that language becomes quite clear if you know what to look for. The phrase regulating commerce was a well-defined legal term. We also have examples of early American statutes regulating commerce with the tribes. And we have a mass of other reliable evidence. Admittedly, not everything about regulating commerce with the Indian tribes is 100% certain, but it is certain that regulating commerce does not include intervening in child placement decisions as the Indian Child Welfare Act does. Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote the majority opinion for the Supreme Court. There are three contradictions at the core of her opinion, which makes it unusually incoherent for a normally careful justice. First, Justice Barrett admitted that any congressional power, quote, must derive from the Constitution, not the atmosphere, because, quote, Article I gives Congress a series of enumerated powers, not a series of blank checks, end quote. But she then found congressional authority in sources outside the Constitution, including something she called pre-constitutional powers and a trust relationship. Second, Justice Barrett claimed that Congress's Indian power is plenary, a word that means absolute. But then she said that the Indian Affairs power is not absolute. Third, she wrote that Congress's authority under the Indian Commerce Clause is not absolute because it has boundaries. But then she expanded those boundaries beyond the orbit of the planet Saturn. Quote, Congress's power under the Indian Commerce Clause, she said, encompasses not only trade, but also Indian affairs. But recall that giving Congress unlimited Indian affairs authority was precisely what the framers rejected. Instead, they gave targeted powers to Congress, the President, and the Senate, and left the rest to the states. Justice Barrett claimed congressional power was exclusive of state responsibility. In other words, she claimed the states have no role in Indian affairs. But that contention is disproved by the Ninth Amendment and the Tenth Amendment. It also is contrary to more than 200 years of practice. In real life, Native Americans become subject to state law all the time. When they drive on state roads, they must obey state traffic laws. When they vote, they do so mostly under state regulations, and so forth. At some level, I think Justice Barrett understood the weakness in her argument. This is because her principal reliance was not on independent reasoning, but on case precedents. But these precedents aren't worth much as constitutional analysis. In his dissent, Justice Clarence Thomas accurately described those precedents as, quote, judicial ipsa dixit. Ipsa dixit is a Latin word for he himself said it. In other words, Justice Thomas was saying, those cases merely pronounce it so because we say so. Tellingly, Justice Barrett never actually ruled that ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act, is constitutional. She wrote that the plaintiffs have not proved that it is unconstitutional, and quote, we therefore decline to disturb the Fifth Circuit's conclusion. There was also a concurrence by Chief Justice Neil Gorsuch. I found this concurrence even more disappointing, because I expected so much more from this brilliant jurist. The first third of his opinion was consumed by a list of prior injustices to the Indians, as if shame were a valid constitutional argument. After that, Justice Gorsuch slipped on his own contradictions. For example, he acknowledged that congressional power under the Indian Commerce Clause is not plenary. He wrote, quote, instead of a free-floating Indian affairs power, the framers opted for a bundle of federal authorities tailored to the regulation of the nation's intercourse with the Indians. But he seemed to forget this when he wrote that under the Commerce Clause, quote, Congress has the authority to manage all interaction or affairs with the Indian tribes and foreign sovereigns, wherever those interactions or affairs may occur. Overlooking the fact that some of Congress's authority applies only within federal territories, some of it applies only to non-citizens, and that Congress has no legislative authority to impose treaties. Justice Gorsuch relied on an article that argued that the Commerce Clause grants Congress authority to regulate all human relationships. Of course, history rebuts that notion. Justice Gorsuch then pointed out that during the administration of President George Washington, the federal government assumed broad authority over Indian affairs. He cited the 1790 Indian Intercourse Act and several other early congressional statutes. But in doing so, he overlooked his earlier acknowledgement that the federal government was then operating under a bundle of powers, not under the Commerce Clause alone. The early Indian intercourse laws were also supported by Congress's authority to regulate territories, to regulate the law of nations, and its power to carry out treaties. All of these are utterly irrelevant to the Indian Child Welfare Act. Like Justice Barrett, Justice Gorsuch implausibly dismissed the reserved state role preserved in Indian affairs. After noting the bundle of federal powers, he wrote that, quote, the Constitution came with no indication that states had any similar sort of power, end quote. But of course, he forgot the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. And he also forgot the fact that it was the purpose of the Constitution to enumerate only federal powers, not state powers. There are, however, three silver linings in this case. First, in 2004, Justice Thomas began to encourage the court to rationalize its Indian law precedents. And in this case, Holland versus Brackeen, he contributed to the cause with a brilliant dissent. In my view, it fairly well punctured the court's reasoning. Justice Thomas relies in part on my published research in his opinion. Second, Justice Samuel Alito also dissented. Heretofore, he has avoided questioning Congress's excessive commerce power pretensions, except when Congress has improperly commandeered or issued orders to state legislatures and executives. Perhaps Justice Alito has become more resistant to Congress's disregard of constitutional limits. And third, poorly reasoned decisions often don't last long over the long term. Later courts frequently narrow them, overrule them, or punch holes in them. If we are fortunate, that will happen to Holland versus Brackeen. I'm Rob Nadelson, and thanks for listening.